So yeah, we'll get things started. People can roll in. It's kind of casual. My name's Jeff. I'm the moderator of the panel, so I have nothing to do with webcomics whatsoever. But if things slow down, I'll be fielding some comical questions and making fun of you. If you'd like to introduce yourselves, gentlemen, you all seem to be big in the webcomic industry, so
Sorry.
Massive.
Bailing scale. Bailing yeah. Scales. Then,
we're a juggernaut.
Yeah. Penny Arcade big.
Who?
Who? Exactly.
So I guess me?
Yeah.
All right, I'm Taro McCarthy. I pretty much use the web as a promotional tool. I have comics on there, but I don't really have a web comic. I promote my comic, actually. That's pretty much what I do. I do the comic Corduroy High and also do this new comic called Tyne. And that's pretty much it for me.
I'm Brian McLaughlin. I do a comic called The Princess Planet for Transmission X. And I don't need to waste any more time. Go ahead.
I'm Jeff Moss. I write No Reason Comics at noreasoncomics.com.
My name is Dan Simon. I draw No Reason Comics, and it's all online for now.
For the moment.
Till the trade.
In an ironic twist, we're doing a book.
I'm Carl Herschel. I also, along with Brian and guys and some others who aren't here yet, Transmission X got a comic. I do a comic called The Abominable Charles Christopher, which was updates on Wednesdays, 2 days before Andy's.
My name's Andy. I do Raising Hell on Friday. I also draw Charles Christopher on Wednesdays. A lot of people don't know that, but I actually draw it as well. I also the artist for Kookaburra. A lot of people don't know that. Well, I actually write since Tula as well.
It's more guests now than people in attendance, I think.
Have you gotten enough attention yet, Cameron?
Mm-hmm. I'm Scott Heffern, and I draw webcomics for Transmission X called The Port. I think Cameron wants to talk
about it.
Hi.
I'm
Scott Heffern.
I have no funnel on me.
Okay.
You know my funnel.
Have we started yet?
We're just doing the introductions.
Sorry. Oh, I went over here. All right.
You're talking out of turn.
Are we at... Oh, really?
We cycled through.
It was him.
Yes.
The talking stick.
Who are you?
Okay, there we go. Danielle Corsetto, I do Girls with Slingshots, girlswithslingshots.com or gwscomic.com. We're done?
Also known as the successful...
Yeah, we all suck.
It's bizarre.
See, varying degrees of success.
These guys are in the nose of the guys who can draw.
I can. It's a self-deprecating room.
Okay, well, some of them are.
So, just general, I guess, throw a question. What prompted you all to put your art and your comics, or some of you have other books in just page format, what prompted you to put them on the web?
Cost. It costs almost nothing to put something up online, and it gets to a much wider audience than just having it in a bookstore or in a comic store.
For me, I made my career primarily as an illustrator, illustrating other people's stories, and I wanted to experiment and write my own material. And it, you know, not having a proven track record, it's difficult to convince a publisher to give you a writing job without having something already done. And so this gave me an opportunity to write and to hone my script writing skills as well as my drawing.
Gentleman on the couch, anybody?
Yeah, pretty much the same. Just an opportunity to do what you do the things I love that mainstream publishers generally don't want to be part of.
Yeah. I'm doing it because all my friends were doing it.
Just like
later on, we're gonna jump off a bridge. I'm pretty sure Scott's gonna help.
That's how I got into cliff diving.
We actually got drunk.
Yep.
And thought it'd be fun.
Cliff diving?
He can't do that.
You'd be surprised what's fun when you're drunk, so. Convenience, too, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, much easier to produce a comic online than.
And web comics are the future.
It is the future. There's also something that that's kind of cool about the immediacy of it. Like, when you finish it, you put it up online, and within, you know, people have it on their RSS feeds. Within minutes, you have feedback.
Yeah.
And people tell you what they like or they don't like or whatever. It keeps you going. It's exciting to get that rather than having, you know, when I do a comic for Marvel or DC, I you know, finish it months in advance, and then it comes out, and then maybe, you know, letters or whatever. But the immediacy of response from the audience is really exciting and invigorating.
For me, it was it was mostly because of the cost, but I live in the middle of West Virginia, so like, well, I live in actually the most civilized area of West Virginia, but it's really not saying much. So I don't have contacts to, you know, nearby to get people to publish or whatever. I have to go up to New York or go out somewhere. I don't even know where you get, start talking to publishers or whatnot. Also, the deadline. Deadline's like the next day, so I can be working on it at 3 in the morning, and I'm not late. Like, I still get it up the next morning, it's fine. So it works well with my procrastination issues.
Anybody, feel free to put my hand up for questions. No. Bueller?
All right, thanks, guys.
That's all right. That's good. Lady in red.
Now, are you guys doing this with a view to get an established base before you move forward into actual physical publishing? Like, is that the eventual goal to get a physical book in, or do you want just, is it that you want to keep with the webcomics as a goal in the future?
Well, yeah, both. Right? Both. It's like Brian said, the reason we are in it is because of cost, right? Publishing a book, you know, just throwing it out there, but the average cost of like a 120-page full-color book to be printed in Canada is $30,000. Like, well, where am I going to find $30,000? Should I rob a bank? You know, so, I mean, there's avenues where you can get it done cheaper outside of Canada and things like this, but it just doesn't make sense if you're not published, right? The whole thing is we want to do work with us, whatever we want to do. Basically, if you're reading my strip or his strip or their strip, it's what they want to put into a comic, not what an editor's telling them they want or another writer's telling them what they want or yada, yada, yada.
Or what we think sells.
Yeah, or what they think sells.
The other interesting thing is that despite putting it out for free on the web, I'm sure all of us get requests for a print edition. Like, I have emails all the time that are going, when will this be available in as a book that I can have? And people are, you know, getting it for free on the web every week, but they want a physical object as well that they have. So certainly my goal is that when the story is complete, I end up doing a book from. And then leave it up on the web as well. And have, you know, you can have both, and one won't necessarily affect the sales of the other.
I'm planning on putting a collected book out this year, and it's going to have extra stuff, like director's cut, X-rated scenes,
Our actual question is: are we purists to just doing web comics as opposed to publishing? I don't think any of us have any problem with publishing it for the sake of making it sustainable.
I'll tell you, I don't have an eye on print publishing when I'm creating.
No, I don't draw it.
When it's collected, great, it's a collection. But I'm not, you know, I don't have in mind, you know, story arcs that will fit nicely to X number of pages in the book.
When I'm writing and drawing mine, I think of it. I'm trying to exploit the form of it being on the web as a weekly serial, and that's kind of my primary thought when I'm drawing. And then, you know, later it can be printed. But the first thought is always doing it as a web.
I don't know about you. I don't know how many web comics any of you read, but you know, generally, if someone's doing something for print, it'll be in traditional print dimensions, and that stuff doesn't really—it's not accessible on the web. It doesn't read well. You have to scroll down a comic page.
Yeah.
So, kind of, we're all working in screen dimensions pretty much. Mm-hmm. So, having said that, we may be seeing more books of that dimension come out in the future. Because there are a lot of web comics now.
Landscape rectangles.
Well, mine is always every week a grid of 4x2 rectangular panels, which I was thinking, mobile devices like the iPhone or whatever, like people reading comics, it seems to be the thing where people want to read comics on their mobile. And I thought of, you know, being able to flip through it panel by panel and always having the same dimensions to that, so it could be exploited in that medium as well, not just on a computer.
Yeah. Okay, I also crazy, but we can just
have the
question. Did you all make websites before you did this, or was it like
No, we have Ramon do all our websites.
All right, Ramon Perez, ladies and gentlemen. Awesome.
I used to work for an internet host before I started getting into this, doing media stuff, so building websites wasn't. It's been problematic for me just because I don't have all the scripting skills I guess I need, but I found people that help, and I remember. But
if you're concerned about having to know that stuff, don't be. It's ridiculously easy.
Yeah. You can go to, like, most of the TX, all of the TX guys use WordPress, which is a free software which you can go and, you know, you can host it on the WordPress servers and just, like, they have a template that you can download and just
plug and play.
Do you use that? So.
No, I write mine by hand at Notepad, actually.
I started doing that.
You do all the HTML?
I've been doing all the HTML by hand for years now. Yeah. I got into web design when I was younger, and I kind of wanted to do that before I realized that, you know, I might actually be able to make this a cartoonist. So I was fascinated by the fact that you could, you know, make all these little JavaScript things, and, you know.
You're living on the edge, though, because you're one little number off or anything. The whole page just goes poof.
I know. Oh, no, it's happened. I get a lot of emails.
Your site looks like a standard kind of
like a comic WordPress thing almost. Yeah.
It wouldn't be that.
I think they based it off of my
They'd be your style.
No, I get that a lot, but no, it's all by hand. I actually copied one of Scott Kurtz's PvP website designs a long time ago. I didn't copy it directly, but I took a lot of things I liked from it and set it up that way.
And then he's on WordPress.
Yeah, I know. So I'm trying to get in with Umbrella, because that way they'll just go ahead and do it for me. I'm sick of writing these every night.
Yeah.
I write 3 new pages every night before I update the website.
That's how you should do Butternut, too.
Oh, really? That's right.
Wow. Can't imagine that.
When it comes to me updating the website, I tell him to do it.
What is Umbrella? What's Umbrella?
That's a collective. Should we get on the collective topic? Well, actually, yeah, you guys have a collective. Collectives are dumb. I've been told it kind of houses more of the 20-something indie, which is why I don't understand why they're asking me to join in, but the 20-something indie kind of style.
Eric Grubin is like an old person. Mascot?
Thanks,
Ramon. And Ramon is ours.
I'm their mascot.
I'm giving you enough. Yeah. You're right. I deserve that.
Someone on a podcast referred to us as the stodgy European collective.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
That wasn't me,
stodgy European.
Okay, good.
We're all just accountants.
Just a blanket question to everybody. How do you feel trying to better what's out there? Because there is a lot of webcomics out there, and it is sort of like, it's just like regular comics. You sort of have to weed and make yourself sort of stand above the rest of the herd, if you will.
You don't try to be better than anybody else. You just try to be the best you can be. That's the whole idea of doing it online.
That's totally the opposite of what I thought. I was looking at a lot of bad ones going, I can do that way better.
Crushing Sprite comics?
The best advice is to give somebody who wants to get into it is to do a really good comic.
Yeah. That's easy. It doesn't take any time at all, like 5 minutes.
I think jumping back to the collective, because there's like Dumbrella, we have the TX, and then there's also like Day 3 Press,
Activate.
A bunch of others, Activate, Blank Label.
Weren't you part of Blank Label?
No, I want to.
Oh, yeah. I think those organizations are great, because when I started Butternut like 5-6 years ago, I was a nobody. I didn't know anybody. I didn't even know webcomics existed, and it was a great way to kind of get other established guys to kind of help promote me and so on and so forth. So it's a good way to get the novice exposure on the web, you know, because you create a larger footprint that people can recognize, and then, you know, you can kind of move off and do your own if you want, or you can stay with the collective. And, you know, but I think it's a helpful way to get yourself recognized quicker.
The good thing about what we have going is that most of us share the same studio, or, you know, at least are quite close friends, and so we motivate each other to keep working.
Yeah, we see each other enough that the only thing we don't do is sleep with
each other. So that's where we went wrong.
When we get the reality TV show.
That'll be the next step.
Slice.
I've heard there's safety in numbers too, so.
But there's the motivation because you see what everyone else is doing, and it galvanizes you and makes you excited to work on your own thing.
So you're always trying to one-up each other.
Yeah, exactly. And then, well, then there's also the fear of failure too, because if one of us fails to update on the day that we're supposed to, then we get, you know, mocked and brutalized.
And you have to get by breakfast.
And we have to buy breakfast or lunch for the entire.
I think that's thrown under the that's thrown out now.
No, you still owe us breakfast.
Yeah, now that you have
to. Now that I'm a state.
Go ahead.
What is the best way to promote a webcom?
You tell us.
Do
a good comic strip.
Again, he's
for a long time, for like 3 years.
Yeah, do it in 3 years.
Well, I think it's just the old adage, you build something of quality and the audience will eventually come to it.
Yeah.
You know, like you're going to start off slow and then build and build an
promotion,
audience.
Like a webcomic promotion has a lot to do with networking with other webcomics.
Yeah, yeah. Cross-linking.
Huge. Yeah. It's all about, all of them.
Yeah, somebody over here.
I think Carl and I may have had a rude awakening because we, we have kind of established mainstream comics careers, and I think we were expecting that we would come straight out of the gate with, like, all of our kind of built-in audience. And that
didn't you got 50,000 readers of your comic, they're all going to come read.
Yeah, exactly. And, you check the stats, and it's like, 25 people read it. I think that was kind of the...
It's just my mom reading mine.
My mom has read mine and put comments in mine.
Oh, my God.
It's something like, hey, Andy, read your webcomic. Still don't understand you.
Yeah, that's the weekly phone call I get from my mom. I don't get it, but it looks pretty.
But Danielle, I was asking you that question before, and you were saying that one of the things you do is you just leave a lot of business cards lying around in different places.
Yeah, I'll drop them off at in bathrooms. I'm trying to make magnetic ones so I can stick to that. While you're sitting there, huh? You're gonna read it. Thinking about it. So it's doing more physical, like non-click URL kind of stuff. Actually, I actually haven't done a whole lot of job, work to promote mine. So.
Have not.
I didn't sleep much last night. I haven't done much of anything. I tell people to always put their URL to their website and their signature for everything they do, if they're going to be on forums, for their email, that sort of thing. That's really helpful. But beyond that, I really haven't done a whole lot. I haven't advertised at all.
There's various listing sites and stuff like that for webcomics.
Right.
And then... there are things like Project Wonderful that are pretty easy for, like, you don't need thousands of dollars to start up an advertising campaign. You can start with $50 and you can get it out to other little comics, and you can start building little networks of friends and that kind of thing. And it's a good just to keep talking to other comic creators and fans. Fans are your biggest promoters, because if they love you, they'll go out and talk to you about with their friends if their friends don't think they're geeks.
No, from the webcomic, sort of the Sewell webcomic, right? How have you found the convention experience?
Great.
Yeah.
Fun.
I find most of the people who read the webcomics don't read mainstream comics. That's my experience anyway. Yeah. So I find a lot of people coming to shows that I meet at these shows are, fans of mainstream, they'll be kind of check out the webcomic, but the people who actually read the webcomic regularly never come to shows, so they'll be like, oh, I wanted to come meet you, but I didn't want to pay $30 to get into the show, and or whatever, or like, oh, what are these comic conventions? What is that?
I don't have to dress up like a Klingon.
You have to dress up on a costume? So it's kind of an interesting, I call it the regular people who have day jobs, nine-to-fivers have their, check the webcomic on their lunch break or in the morning while they're having their coffee in the office, and then you have, the fans of comics who come to the cons, and so it's like almost like two different crowds reading your material.
Yeah, there's not a lot of crossover, really.
So no.
A lot of people come from, people who know me from mainstream comics come and they go, are you ever going to work on Batman again? And I go, well, no, but I'm doing this webcomic, and they go, but Batman.
You should put Batman in your
Yeah,
like it seems to be like a two separate kind of world. I mean, there's a small, you know, if you had a Venn diagram, there's like a small little crossover, but maybe not.
I think even within the mainstream publishers, like if you go to the Dark Horse website or you go to the DC Zuda's site or whatever, like you go to those sites, and I don't think they're picking up as quickly as their readership in print would you'd think would translate to the web. That I think it's just two different formats.
Yeah, I've even had people go, I'm like, hey, here's my webcomic. They're like, kill a tree, print it, then I'll read it.
The Republicans, right. Mainly? Yeah. The Republican answer,
yeah.
Mainly?
Kill two trees, not I'll read it. So, speaking of Zuda, a couple of you have partaken in the Zuda experience. Can you speak about that just a little bit?
None of us are Zuda.
Carl and I did some promos for Zuda. I don't know. I think it's, you know, they received a lot of flack, but I think they are bringing they're bringing people up, the audience's eye to webcomics, and hopefully, like, I know Zuda's talked to Transmission X and Activate about doing cross-linking and cross-banner promotion, so, like, I think that'd be great. You know,
the joke is on them, really.
How does it feel having a company backed by DC coming to you and being like, can you put our banner on your site, please?
Well, the guy who runs Zuda is awesome. Like, he's a great guy.
Yeah, he's great.
Quant is the best.
Yeah, and he really wants to, you know, promote webcomics. He's been given free reign to do this thing. And, you know, he's obviously stuck in the middle. He has to create something that benefits the company, but at the same time tries to benefit the creators, you know. So I think he did the best he could do in the vehicle he was kind of given, but... I think overall, like, I think Zuda is good for you know...
It's a gateway.
Yeah, it's a gateway, yeah. It's a gateway drug.
It's like pot.
But at the same time...
They're the pot, we're the cocaine.
Yeah.
Everybody come and kill them.
First one's free.
Yeah.
Actually, they're all free.
And the next one, free.
You better buy it.
Yeah.
No, it's not... There's definitely nothing wrong with Zuda. Like, it's pretty good, but at the same time... everything they're doing, basically putting up your strip on the web, is not really anything you can't do yourself. Like you're saying with WordPress, that, you know, if you want to do the promotion yourself, if you're willing to, if you know some people that are going to link to you, if you're willing to go out on message boards and promote yourself, you know, and then, you know, you can. It's not like they can do much, a lot more than you could do on your own if you were, you know, a DIY type person.
There's a fairly clear roadmap that's been established for how to do this stuff. Put the effort into finding out, you know, how to do it. And so it's basically just getting up off your ass.
Yeah, it's kind of like Scott McCloud's done a book, and so is Kurtz and his crew. They put up books about making webcomics.
Right.
So.
And I think it's actually getting on your ass, because you have to sit down. Like, that's a nice day out, but I've got to update.
This seems kind of like the newspaper syndicate of the webcomics world. Because like, if I wanted to just go ahead and, you know, screw creators' rights, screw doing something that doesn't have to do with sex jokes, you know, I just want to do something that makes money, then I would definitely want to go with a syndicate.
And you get a paycheck.
Get a paycheck, yeah. But you don't have to sit down and like think, how on earth am I going to make my bills this month? So it seems like Zuda's kind of like that. They take care of all the stuff that you don't want to have to do, but you've got creators' rights and your...
you let go of certain parts.
Yeah, your own freedoms you can't necessarily have.
Gentlemen in the back.
How do you guys feel about like merchandise? What works for you in terms of promotion?
That's our plan this year. That's what we're looking at doing this year, coming out with
all action figures.
Lots of lunch boxes, pugs.
Pogs?
Bring it back.
We've been updating for so long.
Pogs are back.
I
want to
be a
good
old.
No, I don't know.
Andy just starts talking.
I don't know.
It's good. It has the same problem that printing the book has, is that it takes money up front.
Yeah.
But if you can, there's a lot of things on the net now where they'll just ask their audience how much response they get. And, you know, if they get, you know, 400 people saying, I would like a print or a toy or a t-shirt, then it's, you can tell that you get a feel for how much safety you have in putting that money out. But Ramon's, I mean, got by far the most successful of all of us site, and he's still has. Yeah, but you doing your t-shirts, even you have trouble.
Yeah, it's strange. Like, you don't know what people
slow process.
You don't know what people like. Like, the first run of t-shirts I did, I did 4 different t-shirts. One was really successful. The other ones kind of sold mediocre, and there was one that kind of took like years to get rid of all my stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And the one that was like, the one that took years had pictures of the characters on it, so I was like, oh, I'm never doing that again. So the next round I did t-shirts, I did like all these different slogans and stuff, and it was fun, and they'd be selling pretty good. And people were like, but we want t-shirts with characters on them. And I'm like, what? Last time I made one, it didn't sell.
Yeah.
That's all you people want. So it's like a give and take kind of, you know, like it's all a gamble. And like I like to do quality printing, so I don't like to go to like Cafe Press or something where they do digital prints on a shirt or something like that. So I like
almost has to be made to order a little bit.
So
you know what I mean? We do have a t-shirt press.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
So baby steps.
We're doing something with pre-ordering.
Yeah, pre-ordering.
We got some
good
tips
too.
From the Blind Ferret guys, and they suggested that going through and creating like options for people and giving them a place to give feedback on what they want, and you get a sense of what they want.
Yeah. Also, design shirts that you would wear, because if they don't sell, you're going to have
to. I found that the merchandise really depends on what kind of strip you're doing and what kind of people are reading it. I was really hoping that t-shirts would take off. This is the second convention I've had t-shirts at. I sold like 11 last time, and apparently that's kind of good, but it's kind of limited. 11 shirts?
Drinks are on you tonight.
Yes. Wow.
And we've got to stock every size or variety of
sizes. I know, exactly.
Yeah.
A lot of women's shirts, a lot of men. But then the men's shirts, I'm like, oh, guys actually want these, you know, buy me a drink shirts. All right, well, I guess I got some cops ones.
Buy me a drink or buy me a drag?
Maybe one or the other. But for me, the books sold really well. And I'm going to be doing shot glasses coming with the characters on each of the shot glasses, like a drink book. And I think that's going to do pretty well.
I'd buy that.
Yeah, I figure all my readers are alcoholics like me, right? So it should be okay.
Are you an alcoholic?
No.
Last night she was
lying. Are you? Are you just saying that in public to be nice? Because we'll see in about 6 hours.
Keep an eye out on me.
We'll see.
Actually, you only see it in an hour. They're having a panel down. They're having a panel down in the hotel bar.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
the only reason I'm going.
Women in comics panel.
Women in comics.
Why is it a panel bar?
Well, then
all this talk of bars. Put your webcomic in a bar. Everyone will love it.
Yeah. Work for Cheers.
There you go.
True.
Good
call.
Why isn't this in the bar?
I didn't realize all of you would show up if asked. I assumed you'd all be busy sketching, so I didn't.
I asked you.
You asked me. I don't know. You were given. And you, I don't
I'm like, can we tag along?
Sketching. So, aww. But the rest of the family are fairly busy sketching and signing and doing your various work. So I just figured, you know, you would show up. You would show up. I'd have backup plans.
The trick is just keep moving.
Now I have a couch. Had I known you'd all show up, we would have moved to bar.
Sure.
Thank you. Any questions? Please, questions before you miss up.
Yes, I have a question. I guess I'll put it out to the panel. I've seen some, I don't know all the artists with transmission hacks and right here stuff. How do you feel about webcomics that include animation? What's your take on that?
Awesome. Good. If I knew
how to do it. Yeah, then you get to the question of when does it stop being a comic and when does it start being
a movie?
Yeah,
an animated. A flash movie.
Why is it something you're considering doing? Are you just trying to get an opinion? Because it's not necessary for sure. I mean, you're not going to win over readers by having animated stuff. You're just creating a lot of work for yourself.
That kind of thing could be done very poorly too. Like I've seen some things like they do those Marvel comics things.
Yeah.
You click and then work on it.
The World War Hulk trailer.
Yeah. That shit could be really annoying.
I think the only time I've seen it done in an interesting fashion was R. Stevens has done it in Diesel Studies a couple times off panel, where maybe the background color changes or sound effects. Sorry,
someone's talking on the panel.
R. Stevens from Diesel Studies has done a couple of interesting things with maybe just one panel, and maybe there's something that moves or the background color changes, and I think that's been an interesting thing that he's done. But as far as getting into it where you have to click through, really annoying.
Comics on the web seem to be about immediacy.
Yeah.
Creating them and reading them. And people want to probably read them while they're procrastinating at work. They get in and out of there as fast as they can. And the more work you create for them while they're on that page, the fewer people will put up.
Yeah, traditional comic strip 8 broke, so don't fix it. That's my opinion on that, I think. Unless you want to.
Unless it's really good. In which case, don't do it, because then we'll all have to.
Don't do that.
What comments or special considerations writers should need to know about webcomics?
Should writers know
so
about
the, for the writers on the panel, since you all do your own, you write your own books, mm-hmm. do you take special considerations because of the format or because of course. You know, the readership?
We have to take consideration in that we're only putting up one page a week.
Yeah.
I don't know if that really is about being a webcomic or just about our presentation, but what we're doing.
But also planning out ahead, because if you're telling a larger story, you obviously you're putting up one page a week, and you're
yeah, exactly.
structuring
yeah,
the layout.
To structure it so that there's at least something compelling about each yeah. page and yeah. beat to each.
I try whenever possible, I don't know if I always succeed, but I try, since I am only putting up one page a week, then I always try to include something to move the story forward, but also it ends on a note that leaves the audience, you know, compelled to come back on it, because there's so much that is competing for the attention of the audience that they'll forget it 2 seconds later, you know, they're going on somewhere else. So I always try to have something, you know, meaty and significant to end on so that they, you know, remember it and go, oh, I can't wait to come back next week to see what's going on. But that's mainly because it's a, I mean, it's a good rule of thumb anyway, even if you're doing it daily or a strip or whatever, yeah. is to keep, you know, the reader compelled to keep reading it. But
I also try to keep dialogue light, because people don't want to get dragged down. It's a, you know, comics is a visual medium, and you know, too much dialogue, too much text, people just get bogged down, and they're like, and be like Carl said earlier, they want a quick fix at work. They want to spend half an hour reading a chapter.
That's just yeah. like your opinion, man.
It is an opinion, but I find, you know, the more dialogue heavy ones take, like I've tried reading web comics, and the ones that are dialogue heavy, I'll just kind of like slow down. Like, I can't make it.
Reading is hard.
I have trouble reading.
Think about it.
Writing for scripts is actually a really neat experiment, because you have to. I always overwrite when I come up with the idea, and you have to economize because you've only got 4 or 5 panels in a single tier. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's really great for just training yourself to pick whatever is absolutely necessary to get that gag across and tell that good story.
And he hasn't learned that.
That's just my opinion.
Well, there's been a couple of times where we've had to edit down what's being said just because of space and how much is going into a panel. But I think that's true for print comics as well. Like anything that applies to a print comic would apply to a web comic as well.
General question, is there anything you won't do in a webcom?
And you will.
I will do anything and everything.
I will put ads on my page. That should open a whole...
whole the characters will never be naked?
Depends how much money's involved.
You're talking about writing.
Just writing art, whatever you're doing with ads on the page. Are you comfortable advertising to gross products? Like, this page is now sponsored by Zoom, that sort of thing.
I don't know. Like, I think
you know Zoom wants to sponsor my thing.
They sponsor Ask a Ninja.
You know, it's a personal preference thing. Completely.
Oh.
Right. I hope it
is. You know, your answer.
If it's solely a personal thing for you, and you don't care about, you know, making money off of it, you want your story told, and you think those ads will interfere with it, then fine. If you really would like to make some money off your strip and someone is offering you that and it makes sense, then
if you don't need freedom.
Even as if it's your content, though, it's more or less that if you notice that certain age demographics are reading your online comic, do you then adjust the story to adapt or cater to them, or do you just continue what you're doing?
No, I don't think you should ever
do that.
It's, you know, I mean, the good thing about doing this stuff for yourself is that you're free to do whatever it is that you want and feel appropriate doing. And I never have tried to alter the content based on what I anticipate people want or whatever. I do it primarily to satisfy myself.
I don't think people know what they want anyway, to be honest. Yeah. Like, they don't really know if they like something until they've seen it. Yeah. And to try and predict, even me thinking about trying to predict what I would like to see in something, it's the things that are unpredictable that's really satisfying. So if you're trying to follow trends, or you just have a fishtailing kind of style and story, it wouldn't be satisfying to do anyway.
I think we avoid the soapbox some web commenters fall into that trap where it sort of turns into the personal podium to express their ideas about politics and religion and the world in general. I think we try and stay away from that.
Well, I don't know. For example, the current strip that we have up online ends with a giant bee playing with a Rubik's Cube, which could quite easily be construed as a comment on politics.
Man's modern dilemma.
It's difficult. Well, he's a worker bee, but what's he working toward?
So even still, though, like if say Hollywood were to approach you and obtain, since you're private, your own personal property, if they were to obtain it, they say they want to change it.
I have no principles.
Well, that comes down to the whole thing about, like, oh, they've ruined the comic. And it's like, but if they haven't ruined the comic, the comic still exists.
Well,
it's
a separate thing. As long as I think Hollywood ruined it and not us, then I'm okay with that.
My mom reads my comics, so I have to kind of, as far as censoring things, generally keep it. She calls me 2 days a week, Sundays and Wednesdays, so if I'm going to do something really offensive, I try to do it on a Wednesday night, but she, like, won't read it until the next morning. She'll forget about it. Got a lot of angry phone calls.
Yeah, we've actually cut jokes out of our comic because Rob is like, my mother reads this, we can't do this. I'm like, come on! No.
Your comic has Rob naked and filled with bacon.
But nothing's exposed. Apparently that's okay. Well, he had an issue with being hit in the head by a sex toy I was using in the comic. And I tried to explain that it was only in the comic world. I would never really throw a sex toy at him, but, you know, wow. Whatever. He was taking offense, so we threw it at my mother instead. What are you going to do?
Awkward. Yeah. And question in the back.
Here to the table.
Just in terms of craft, like going from story to panel, do you guys have a particular format you follow or do you have a process? Like, for
what was that?
Going from like your story, like when you write out a strip itself, mm-hmm. and going from that to like the actual drawing, is there a particular process you use? Or
script to script artwork?
Yeah.
I think everybody works differently. Like, I work from artwork to script, so I plot mine visually.
Yeah.
And I have a vague idea of what the dialogue and text is as I go, but it's all plotted visually and paced visually, and then I go in and do the. I put in the rough text, and I sit there and fine tune as I go in, and you know, and that's kind of, so I kind of work backwards.
If you're writing and drawing the thing yourself, it's redundant, I think, to write a script and then illustrate. You know, I mean, the drawing is the writing. And so I do the same as Rob, Joe, most of the time. We kind of plot it out based on images first, and then once that's done, then, you know, fit the dialogue in there. The whole process is the writing of it, the drawing and the you know, the actual letter.
I work a little bit differently in that I do try and write a finished dialogue piece before I go in and draw anything, so I know how much room I have play around, because I want to know exactly how much room I have. If the joke is going a little long, is it going to fit in six panels? That kind of thing. So I think it can help to write it out first. If you're less visual, if you're more of a writer, I know these guys think visually, so they draw visually. But I'm a writer, I think, before I'm an artist.
So since I'm Butter and I collaborate with Rob, we do actually sit down and do rough scripts beforehand. So we go, okay, yeah, but as we're writing it, I'm visually pacing it out at the same time. I'm going, okay, we need five panels here, we need this panel to go here. And we kind of, it's a back and forth kind of thing. But with Cuckoo, I do solely visual first.
I can see that, actually.
You know?
That makes sense.
Yeah, I just write mine out, and then I just plot it out after. I don't know, I can't do the visual thing first. Like, I draw, but then, like, I have to write it out first. See, like what you said, to have, like, a complete script. Mm-hmm. And then from there, but then when you're drawing, then you add in things that make it better than your actual script. I don't know. It's
weird. Those are all so talented.
Everybody works differently. Everybody has their own process. You know.
Yeah. The process is fluid, too. I mean, I find that as I'm drawing things, I might move panels around that fit in a better. Sorry, my phone's ringing.
Like, I usually write a script for this guy, and then he goes through it, and if he has a question, then I have to sketch something, and those are the best days of his life. Then I hand him like stick figures, and I'm like, this is what it looks like.
Yeah.
He laughs and laughs, and I die a little inside.
we do what we call, we tend to refer to as jam sessions every couple of weeks, where we kind of
cool.
Jam. We like to think we're rock stars. But we'll just, you know, we sit in the living room together and we'll think up ideas and stuff like that and bounce it off. And it'll be like, well, on the first panel, maybe he should say this and that kind of thing. So we pace it out as we go. It's sort of like the visual and the dialogue sort of go together.
Then he goes and watches TV while I write.
Yeah.
That's kind of what Rob and I do too. Like, we sit down and have a jam session. And we yeah. Shoot. Rob was like, how about this idea? I'm like, no, that sucks. And then, yeah. then he'll be like, you know, you suck. And then we think about that for 2 hours. And at the end of the hour, we're really tired. We're like, is it funny? I don't know anymore.
Ours just make less and less sense as we go along. So it's like, if we don't get that immediate idea down right away, it gets completely lost.
Yeah. Although sometimes I wish we wrote down all of the things. So when we do
everything,
we could be like, here's the six alternative endings that we came up with.
Because we've lost so many ideas just by not writing them down. Even if it's just like a punchline or an idea, write it down. Because otherwise, we forget stuff.
So I was taking a picture of the guy sleeping.
It's exciting, we know. You like my coffee, sir.
Using a webcomic as like a promotional tool for an eventual like print comic.
Oh, I think so, totally, yeah.
Perfect idea. That's how I started that.
Well, that's pretty much what I do.
More to that?
Finish your question.
if you put it all up and are people going to say, well, I've already read it, why should I buy it?
No, I think that exactly the opposite experience. People always ask for print edition. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You'll probably get like a small percentage. On, you know, either way, that will refuse to, you know, read it on the web if there's extra content but they have the book, or if they, you know, can read it online, they will not buy it. They will not buy the collection.
I have a book coming out, like a physical book coming out from Pony Press. It's called The Apocalyptics, by the way. they were promoting the book and they were going to do a preview online, and they were going to release the entire first third of the book, so 50 pages. Free online. I thought they were crazy. What are you doing? You're giving away most of it for free. And they got the marketing guy at Pony Press. He said, no, the more they put online, the higher their sales are. Because people, they like to read it online, but then they want to have the physical article as well. And the more they know of what's actually in it, you know, they feel like they're not taking a risk on buying an untested thing, right? So the more that they've actually already seen, the more likely they are to buy it. Pony puts entire books up online. And apparently, like a PDF one, and apparently the sales are unaffected.
So you said that, like, amongst your fans, there's very few who are sort of into both the webcomic and the physical thing. But, like, for you yourself, how much are you influenced by, like, traditional comic books? And
greatly. Well, we have background. We grew up with that stuff. So, yeah. If anything, now, doing the webcomics is it's freeing, but it's also maybe a little scary at first, because you're treading on ground that you're not comfortable with. You're leaving,
and
it's safe. It's superhero.
Yeah. And it is risky in that it's something that you're doing for free. You're committing a huge part of your life to it. Like, you know, every day in the week, this day is like, that's for my webcomic where I don't make money. That's where I'm going to work my ass off and not make money. Right?
And never producing the script, there is probably no influence from regular comics.
Yeah. Aside from the basic mechanical, like the understanding of how words and pictures
there are
together.
Sequential.
I don't think any of us are influenced by mainstream.
But it's kind of funny. I always found it funny that the web being an unlimited canvas, everybody follows the newspaper comic template.
Paper, you know? Don't fix it.
Yeah, you know, but you know, I've seen the comics that keep scrolling to the right, just keep reading. It's awesome. I think it's wicked. Just keep going and going.
I think that's kind of like they say the proscenium arch, which is, you know, in the theater, that thing that, you know, as you're watching the play, you forget that it's there because all the action happens in there, and I think that's kind of why we all stick to that small grid, is because if you go outside of that, if you go into the audience and you start interacting with them like they do in The Lion King, you know, you better have a good reason to do it. You know, it better really, you know, have something to do with your story if you have to scroll like that. Otherwise, it's just another trick and effect and a gadget and a whistle that you don't need.
Also, back to the immediacy factor, you like to see exactly what you're getting into. If you can't see the end of the thing, you don't know how long you're going to be there reading. Honestly, like, I mean, if you're sitting at work and you don't know how long this thing's going to scroll, then it's an impediment to it.
Right. You can't hide it from your boss fast enough.
You could just look at the left wall.
I don't know if I want to go all the way to the bottom on that one. So. I'd say for me, not very much. My influences are actually mainly from cartoons like Bill Watterson and Calvin Hobbes and the Saturday Morning Comics and Sunday Morning Comics, because that's what I really gravitated towards. And then when I started seeing it showing up online with Penny Arcade and that kind of thing, like, those people are my heroes. I come to these conventions to meet other webcomic artists.
My influences are movies, really, more than comics, weirdly enough. When I'm composing stuff in my head, I always think of it. If I were to shoot it as a movie, how would I do this? And weirdly, you know, I've chosen to do comics instead of comics. But that's actually where my influences are.
Cameron, I have the same memo. and music. Metal. Listen to metal. Crazy.
Andy asked me the definition of MO the other day, and now he's finally got it.
I was watching this old Sylvester Stallone movie, and I always thought that when they said MO, it meant motive for some reason. It said MO, and now that we know the guy's MO, then we need motive. And I was like, oh shit, isn't that the same thing? And Cameron was like, no, you're the idiot.
I was wondering if you could talk a bit about what tools you use for creating your webcomics, what kind of production process.
This guy.
Traditional, very traditional.
Pen and paper. Yeah, so not a lot of actually working.
Same.
I do most of mine digitally now. I started out doing it on paper and scanning it and coloring it, and then I found out about tablets. And I have a day job, I do this part-time. So they bought me a tablet at work because they were like, oh, all the art directors have tablets. And I was like, what's this crazy thing? Oh, wow, I'm doing my comics way easier.
Because then I stole it.
Yeah, then I stole it from my boss. And they were like, what happened to it? I was like, I don't know.
And I'm like, well, I guess
buy me another one. They bought me a better one. So I'm trying to figure out how to swap them. And
it's shrunk.
I put it in the wash.
There was a flood.
I do my rough layout drawings digitally with a tablet and Photoshop. And then once those are, because as I was saying earlier, I mean, it's, if I move panels around or whatever, like, until it's locked, and then I print that out in like a light blue on Bristol board, and then I ink it by hand with a marker.
I think
scan it back in.
I think all of us TX people who do stuff in color on the computer, though.
Yeah.
I do everything by hand still. Well, except for the grayscales at the very end. Actually, I do, when you guys were talking about process earlier, I do really, really intense pencils. Not too intense, but enough so I can get, like, the expressions on the faces are always the first thing I go for that I try to make as accurate as possible. So I use mechanical pencil for, you know, scripting and crossing out all the words that I want to emit from the dialogue so it's not quite so long. And then move it over to, you know, draw the panels. I use a Pentel fountain pen to draw all the lines with. I do it on... Wait, you've never... Seriously?
I thought you used like a pit pen or something.
I wish I could do that, but I still like to work kind of, you know, a small kind of size.
Oh, yeah.
And those nibs just break so really fast. I don't feel like tossing over my shoulder so often. So use a Pentel... Pentel fountain pen, thank you, and then microns to do the lettering, an 08 for bold and an 05 for normal, and then scan that all in.
Do you hand lettering?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do hand lettering too, because everybody thought that my style was, all my friends were like, yeah, you've got kind of a wobbly, uneven style to your art, and you're using computer lettering. And they really don't mix so well. So I have a wobbly hand lettering, and they're like, yeah, even though it's wobbly, that it matches better.
I would use
hand lettering
if I had the time, but it's so time-consuming. I really like hand lettering because it feels like it's more, you know, it's the personality of the artist.
Yeah,
if you look at somebody like Tony Millionaire who does that Maki's comic, I mean, you look at his lettering, and it's like, this is comic lettering, but it totally works for what he does. Yeah. There are a lot of other people who just do non-traditional hand lettering, and if you can do that...
I always wanted to do hand lettering on my stuff, but it's like all the stuff is written on the fly, like the actual final dialogue, so it's always being tweaked right to the very end.
Yeah.
So I just Yeah, rather than, you know, read crosswords out and white out stuff and put
Yeah.
It's funny, the digital, using the digital tools make the process so much more open to change,
yeah.
rather than having to lock yourself
Director's cut.
To one thing. Right. It can work against you, because with endless mutability, you can go forever, like endlessly.
Yeah. I've actually, after posted, pulled my comic off and retweaked the lettering and put it back up.
So many times.
You know, people are like, I was there yesterday, those different words here. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
You were drunk.
Yeah.
What's some of that? We did that too, but we just crossed out Penny Arcades.
What was the name of that tool you guys were talking about?
Dan.
Having to write HTML?
Dan.
WordPress. WordPress with the Comic Crest template by Tyler Martin.
It's just WordPress.com.
Yeah,
it's like, it's just like Blogger software.
But use WordPress, not WordPress
no,
MU.
.com is their thing where you can sign up for your own blog. Oh, download it. .org. And then Comic Crest is on mindfaucet.com.
Or get a friend.
Type WordPress into Google, it'll come up.
If you go to any of our sites, there's links usually on the bottom to WordPress and Comic Crest as well. There's a link on the bottom of all, well, on my sites that says WordPress, Comic Crest, and if you just hit those, you can
go. Don't go to the site, come to our site.
I'll go to the boat.
Yeah. You can do that with the internet.
You can even have them in two browser windows.
Gentlemen, then I'm good. You guys have it set up so that people can donate?
You
yeah,
can give me money.
I take cash.
I don't know if that's going
to
be there tomorrow.
But you know what's funny is I have a button on the side saying that, you know, this comic is free, but if you'd like to donate, then
yeah, because if it's a donation, you don't have to, like, register it as a business, right?
Yeah,
we just don't make any money.
That wasn't the thing. Yeah, I mean, it was more like that. And to date, I think the total donations have been zero. It's kind of a moot point sticking a donate button on it.
I don't think so. Like, I have one of mine. I get regular donations, like, once a week or once every 2 weeks.
Well.
No, but I think it's like... But,
it's Andy Biden.
I don't state the donate, but I just have, like, a little kind of visual image. I don't say donate or anything. It's just, like, you know, if they figure it out, click
it's a
here.
Money bag.
It's rough. Yeah, it's like a money bag could be dancing. Money, you know. But there are times when it, you know, I get no donations for 3 or 4 months, but then there are other times where suddenly, you know, someone donates $50 or something, and I'm like, oh, wow, right there, I'm like, thanks, you know, I send them a sketch or something, you know.
Oh, shit.
We should do that.
Well, no, we had an ethical dilemma with that one, and I've actually sort of refused to put a donation thing up there, because there's, I don't really know how to put this, but there's a lot of crappy comics out there.
Oh, there are.
That put the donation button up when they've got 3 strips up. And I just kind of said to myself when I was building the site, I don't ever want to be that guy who's, you know, if you don't, you know, that's asking for money immediately, I want you to exchange money with me for something that I give you, like the book or...
Like more than 3 strips. I didn't
put mine up.
Yeah, button up now.
We got like 7, so...
Yeah,
seven.
I can understand what you're saying if you weren't a regular poster, but when people know every week, no matter what.
Yeah, I didn't put my button up until I've been doing it for, you know, 8 months or something, and it was regular.
And I call mine the tip jar. You're just like the piano guy in the bar, you know, slip $5 in after you like the song. Maybe it sounds less, I don't know, except for it's like you're providing a free entertainment, and people will often, you know, I've actually gotten, before I had the button up, I had people write in and go, yeah, it's, you know, anyway, I could, you know, send you $5 for saying thanks, you know, whatever. And I'm like, sure, put up the donation button, but, you know, maybe it's just the way you sell the donation button, I don't know. Like,
it's like, there was something I decided early on, and then just never really visited that thing, so I'm not saying it's a bad thing to do, just, I was...
We've had incentives in the past where it's like, if you donate, like, $50, you get a free original, like, an original sketch or something.
Yeah. You're like, PPS.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's a tote and a sketch.
I like the idea, the concept behind that, that people become, instead of thinking of it as a product that you want to buy, you become somebody that supports the arts in a way where, like, you know, how much you want to pay to get into the museum, you're like, you know what, I'm a student, I'm only going to give you, you know, $10. Yeah. I'm going to give you $5 because, you know, I'm really low on rent. And it, like, I feel like that's kind of a better way to scale things is to your audience. It's like those who can afford to, you know, they've got their $1 million homes and they want to give you $100. That's great. If they got, you know.
So the camera would be starting.
But yeah, I think conceptually the idea of working off of a patronage system is a good one.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. So just, I don't know, you and I keep on bringing in the college kids. So. All right, we understand, guys.
I've gotten like the
okay.
dollar donation. I've gotten the 50-cent donation. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, whatever.
Seriously?
Yeah, no, seriously. You know, but
I went to the Met in New York a couple of weeks ago, and it was pay as you can, or pay what you can.
Yeah.
I paid $1. It looked at me like I was a fast.
You just sent me a $50 book for free.
Danielle, what did you do for your to get off the? Do you feel it full time? What was your?
I just got sick of asking people, paying people for money. Shoot, I can't remember how the hell did I do that. Oh, you know what? No, I sold the book. I sold so many books immediately that I was able to finally get into the house I wanted to get into, which I needed more space. I was literally living on boxes of books. Like I didn't have any furniture left. It was all just boxes of books that I was sitting on. So the book did it, and then I decided, you know, I'll just go ahead and start doing merchandise now. You know, I'd rather have something that I can give people. Right now I'm also doing like desktop images. At the very top of the page, you can click on the desktop image. You'll donate any, you know, 30 cents. I've gotten it before. To $100 or whatever, donate whatever you have, and at the very end you get like to a page that has all the different sizes of that certain image for a desktop image for your computer. So you're actually getting something at least, and I feel a little better about it. That's how I got off of it. I just sort of decided to do merchandise.
But when you decided to go full time, you did actually solicit the donation method, like kind of like the funding.
Yeah,
kind
of. I was living off donations for 6 months, I think, something like that.
Yeah. So you promised them a product. You said, I'm going to give you this comic 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just need to make this much money every month to make my
exactly.
way.
So. I still beg every once in a while.
How long have you been doing it?
Full time or?
No, just the comic.
The comic itself is 3.5 years, going to be 4 in October. And,
can it walk yet?
What's that? Can it walk yet? Potty trained at least. Okay. What's the better reason to walk then?
Just what that is.
That was an interesting anecdote. RK Mulholland, who does something positive at one point, was getting a lot of flack because he didn't update very regularly because he has a job as well, and he does his part-time, and he's getting a lot of complaints about that from his readers, and he said, okay, well, here's the challenge. I need to make this much a month, so this over a course of a year to survive, so if you donate this amount, then I will go full-time and update every day. And he got his money.
I shouldn't even know he did that.
That is an interesting anecdote.
Yeah.
Very topical.
How long is that sustainable?
I don't. Well, he's still going as far as I know. I kind of
just
fell
on
off
donations.
A wagon as far as we. What's that?
Just on donations.
Just on donations.
It's a big.
Isn't that what John Burns doing now?
Yeah. Yeah.
John Burns like well, drawing comic books.
John Burns
fueled
by his own self-right, though.
What's that?
John Burns fueled by his own self-right.
Mary shot himself taking swipes at John.
No, no. I'm saying like I think that's what he's doing is that he's saying, hey, if you pay me to do your comic book, I'll do whatever comic book you want. This is how much it is, and. He's had people say, yeah, this is my superheroes, and this is what I want you to do, and he'll do it. And
wow. It's an example to us all.
Yeah. Danielle, are your book sales just web-based sales and whatever you take to shows?
Yep.
There's no distribution outside?
No distribution whatsoever. I have one store with 5 books in it, but as far as I went, I didn't realize that the cut was so high. It's anywhere from 40 to 50%, and I just can't afford that right now.
Yeah.
So, but I went through Lulu.com, so it was a higher markup on the what's the right word? I don't know anything about business. The cost of the actual book was thanks was more expensive than what it would be going through a real printer and getting like 2,000 books. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a trial run, and now that I know I can sell that many books, I'm going to go through a real printer the next time.
Okay, so you haven't done that yet.
You've not yet. Yeah.
I'm just curious because I think it's something we're all kind of thinking about.
Yeah, I really want to do it.
We're all at the point where it's been a year and it's time to collect it.
Yeah.
It's time.
How much do you help each other? Like, I know you do the link thing, but do you, like, buy each other's products or do you give donations to each other or, like...
Well, I draw Carl and I write his and I color his.
You're late.
We offer, like, the TX guys, we offer each other... Not financial support, but
back rubs
and stuff.
Yeah. I don't
know. But advice and you know, we consult with each other on story stuff and, you know, do you like this and what do you think we should do, you know, and because it always helps to have another pair of eyes.
When we first started out, we actually had like creative meetings, like where we'd shoot ideas off each other. That went the way of the dodo, but
we also did that for a long time before we
started. Yeah, we did about for a year.
A year, we were like, are we gonna do it?
We don't have to arrange the meetings anymore, but I mean, there's always that, you know, one of us is, you know, not sure of what we're doing, and so we walk over to the other table and go, what do you think of this? And,
you know. So you're kind of like, are you paying attention to other webcomics? Like, do you see, like
creatively?
Yeah.
No. No, I don't look at Karen's and go, man, I need to be like Karen's or it needs to be like Carl's. No, that's okay. Kind of the, that's what's not here.
Oh.
Good, also because they didn't read it, goddammit. They didn't even read it, they told me. No, no, that's kind of going against what it's all about, right? It's such a, it's, you know, it's because it's something that, you know, it's not for someone else, for money, it's all you. You know, you don't necessarily.
I'm aware of what other webcomic artists are doing because, you know, like when Iron Man came out, everyone and their dog had an Iron Man strip. So we like could look around and be like, hey, that guy's doing it, that guy's doing it, that guy's doing it. So let's stay away from it.
Yeah. I think that's something all the TX group does. Is you're saying what wouldn't we do? Because I don't think we do anything topical.
No.
Yeah. That's good.
No, no, really. Like there's most of them are long form stories too. Kind of thing. I think.
But we don't like go like, oh, this week I could work in Iron Man in the background.
I live in a vacuum, so I've tried to be topical, and I'm like, oh, that's like 6 years behind on that job. So I'm just gonna stick to
it's like date yourself, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So yeah.
As far as my art style goes, I took hints from other comic artists and stuff. I always sometimes just for my own, I'll draw other people's stuff just to sort of get acclimatized with their style. And sometimes that adds, sometimes it doesn't to my style. Like if you look at art comics from the start and where it's at now, they look almost totally different because I started developing. I'd actually stopped drawing for a long time before we started doing the comic. And this was sort of a way to get back into it. So my style is developed with watching other people's artwork and sort of saying, well, that's how they do their line work. I'm going to see how I can play with my line work a little differently. And
storytelling stuff. Yeah. Right, like I had a meeting, like, well, not even a meeting, just I hang out with them all the time, but Ramon and I went out for coffee a little while ago, and it was like, I gotta finish this thing up, you know what I mean? Like, it's getting near the end. What, you know, well, I've got these things, and you know, you sit down and talk about the story and storytelling and stuff like that. And, I ironed it.
I just had a thought, we actually do buy each other's actual print comics, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Scott just did a 4-issue from Star Wars, Knights of the Republic thing, and I bought those because my friend and
I didn't. I want my free copies, man.
It's a copies for a reason.
No, sir.
About like comments and feedback. How do you manage those? Do you get emails? Do you
praise is good, criticism bad.
I am astonished by every comment we get.
They've all been super positive.
You know, they go out of their way to comment. They usually like it. Like, I mean. Ramon is the only one.
Yeah, he's the only guy that has a hater.
But you have so many comments that actually have, you know, one of the three. But comments are really such a narrow slice of, like, one in a thousand big comments. Really, it's like a very narrow view. Yeah, so to take it to even a criticism, if it's legitimate, whatever, like I'll take criticism from anywhere, but to take too much at heart from such a narrow slice of your viewership is danger. Like to let yourself be skewed by one comment, and it's really easy to do because it gets in your head. Like if there's only five little comments, and one guy says, "Well, why did you do that?" It kind of sticks on you. But it's best not to like let yourself be too controlled by it.
But it's also interesting too because I think we touched upon this earlier. That if people like you let the audience affect your storytelling, but on some of our comics, like when I do Kookaburra, it's like people commenting on the storyline, the characters, where they think that they start hypothesizing where things are going and stuff like that. And then once it actually happened, where the guy was like, "I think this is going to happen," I'm like, "Oh my god, he's dead on!" So I was like, I scrapped everything I did for like that week's update, and I was like, but it forced me to kind of think outside the box. It pushed me. I was like, "Oh, that was too predictable." So I kind of pushed it even more. And then everybody was like, "Whoa, we didn't see that coming!" So it's an interesting medium because you're like, as the thing is being created, the audience is participating almost in its creation to a certain degree. Like you can like,
No, go for it.
Well, I was gonna say, like, yeah, you can like ignore comments, or you can, you know, feed off them a little bit. And I would say I let it affect my storytelling. The story's still reaching the same end conclusion, but it just made the, you know, that's like the getting there kind of more interesting. Anyways,
since I do a gag strip, I find that most of the comments I get are other people like adding their own gag to the strip. And, you know, some of the times I'm like, oh, yeah, that was a good one.
Good point.
We actually have a piece of paper available at our table upstairs. We're going to come and look at it and maybe buy something. That is a bunch of strips that we have that where we've, you know, it's just black and white. We've taken stuff out, and we'll give those to people at cons and stuff, and they'll mail them back to us or email them. We'll post them in the forums. I find that's a more effective way to...
professionally.
To get comments back, because then they can do it better than we can.
Yes, the Women in Comics
panel.
I'll
be in the
bar. Hi.
I find the only ones that send really any kind of searing remarks, and when I say searing, it's not really, are the ones that actually, they go ahead and email them. They don't post them on the comic boards, because responses are generally positive, or there's conversations going on there. When they have something that they want to criticize, they'll do it in private, and they don't, because I think a lot of people are afraid of being banned or lambasted and that kind of thing, because if they throw in a negative comment, the other people might jump on there and be like, what are you talking about? We love this stuff. Or one would help.
Really?
Yeah. I just lied for like a minute there.
One last one before we go. Any closing remarks, gentlemen? That's a snap channel.
I got a pee.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Most of the comics on one site, as he kind of writes here, where I kind of do an adventure, whatever, scared stuff. Multiple comics on one site, it cannot work.
Yeah, I guess we have a kind of a weird situation where a lot of the comics on TX are, you know, kind of wildly different age range, like appropriate. Like Ramon's is, you know, for all ages, and Carl's is. Mine is definitely for adults. Andy's is for adults. And we have a main portal site where you can go to all the different ones from that. And we just implemented in the new version of the site. We implemented like a rating system, self-imposed, but like a movie or a video game or whatever. And there's a little kind of thing that just says, you know, this is for mature readers. And I have it, prominently displayed on the top of my. So if somebody's reading, like a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old is reading Ramones, yeah, and they goes, what else is on the site? And they click on mine, or a parent or whatever.
And they're like, hot damn.
Prominently displayed on the top that it's, you know, yeah, future readers.
Yeah.
Then they go to Andy's site, and they're like, I learned how to make a bong here.
And rated X for extreme.
Yeah. So, it can work. And what you might find, though, is that one or two of them become popular and the other ones don't.
I think the beauty of the internet is that you can do that. You can host multiple comics in one place, and it actually increases your readership because people are more willing to explore, as opposed to going into a comic store and picking up one book and then they're like, I'm only going to buy one today.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas when you're putting up your panel's thing, they can click around and be like,
buy it.
I saw a forum thread where people were just talking about how many web comics they read, and one kid posted on, like, said, "Oh, I read 120 a day," and I was like, "Wow, you must be a high school kid."
He was a high school kid until he dropped out to read web comics.
Yeah, but I think that's the best way. If you start building a readership around one, that's what we're planning on doing. Is we have other projects we want to get out. We're going to start opening it up on our site and building something interactive.
We're starting an empire.
Yes.
A galactic empire.
It's an imperium. Any closing remarks, gentlemen?
Hey, go.
Later. See ya.
I have to pee.
What's your MO?
Don't drink and drive.
Thanks, everyone.